Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. Today we have a very special early edition of the QuakeCast, because this one's a little time sensitive with the Kickstarter that goes along with it. We are interviewing Jason Mojica of Bounding Box.
Bounding Box is the developer of Proteus, and you might have heard of this. It's sort of one of those retro FPS shooters, but this one's quite special. We're going to go do a deep dive on this one, and you're going to learn some new things that you probably, even if you've heard of this thing, you may not know.
I think you should go check out this Kickstarter, because if you're a fan of Quake, a fan of Doom, a fan of FPSs in general, I think this is something that you're really going to be interested in, so definitely go check it out.
And if you make maps for those as well, because they've got some exciting mapping tools.
Yeah, the mapping tool sounded especially cool, so you're going to want to listen for that.
My name's Jason Mojica. I'm one of the developers on Proteus. Right now, it's just my buddy Mike and I. We started it, and then we got Josh Dragonfly from the Doom community to kind of join in and help us out. But yeah, so, you know, back in the day, it's actually pretty funny, because like my first real hardcore FPS that I would consider, technically consider GoldenEye a hardcore FPS, but it was definitely like my gateway drug, because when I was little, I didn't have a PC. My parents were Mac people, which is just the worst. And in terms of like the kit, like when you're growing up, there wasn't that many games that were like first person shooters for Mac back in the day. I did get Dark Forces though, which was really sick. But
were you a marathon player as well?
No, I don't think that was
before your time.
Maybe I'm 32, so I don't think it's that before my time. But right. So like what was really great about that was when I was in school, I grew up at like a Catholic school, not by choice, but just like, you know, I was just in there, and we had computer lab. And you'd think that everybody at the school would be super strict, but apparently the computer lab lady was like, as long as you get your assignments done, I don't care what you guys do. And it was super cool, because somebody had, you know, obviously DRM wasn't a thing back in the day. So somebody had a version of Unreal Tournament on the servers. And we were just, as soon as you got done your assignment, everybody would load up Unreal Tournament. And it's such a weird thing to be hearing like ultra kill and like, you know, and everybody's like yelling at each other and stuff. And it's like, you know, there's like the crosses on the wall.
Uniforms, right?
We're all in our uniforms. And as soon as like, somebody would be like, oh, someone like the principal or somebody would be coming. Everybody would just alt tab to like Mavis Beacon or something and continue typing.
That's fun. Which,
yeah, I mean, but it was so great. That was sort of my like first foray into that genre, and I was actually pretty good at it back in the day, and just kind of continued forward. And then like my next sort of like jump into that the first person shooter genre, like a more hardcore version, was Counter-Strike like 1.4 or 1.5, I think, back in the day. And just being a part of that community at a LAN setting was really intense. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a lot of fun. I mean, in general, like, you know, getting it, like for me though, just to like kind of wrap up your question a little bit more, I feel like I missed out on a lot of the Doom and Quake stuff though growing up, because I didn't have a lot of friends that were necessarily hardcore into it or didn't have the money to buy a PC. So it was kind of rare in my circle or in my area. And growing up, I really wished that I had been a part of that circle, and not just from like a gameplay perspective, but also from a design perspective. I felt like I was missing something as a level designer for a long time. And the Quake and Doom communities are essentially what I felt like I was missing. Yeah, so like it's such an awesome thing to finally get back into it and like really dig in. Like now that I'm, you know, at the level that I am professionally, I can really just find the little nuances that I really, really enjoy about each of the different structures. And it's just such a joy to work on. I can't believe that I'm doing it. You know, it's just so much fun.
Well, it's funny that you say you kind of missed out on, obviously you picked up on something because you see these levels and just we'll get into everything, all the nitty gritty, but it's one of those things like you, I look at this game and it's almost like you could have been a designer on Doom. So, or you guys could have been designers on Doom. It instantly, you know, visually is beautiful, but it instantly harkens you back to that gameplay. But, again, we'll get to that in a second. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What are your roles in, what are Mike and your roles in the company? So what, how's the division of labor?
You know, it's actually really interesting. Yeah. I mean, we do have a little bit, but not really. Like Mike has he's like, I have a certain set of skills, you know, and it's amazing. So I think, so a little background on both of us, I guess, you know, I actually grew up in the modding community for Half-Life 2, for my PC days. And Mike apparently did as well. Like when we met at Raven Software, that's how I know Sean, like Shrimp Scampi and Simon O'Callaghan, because I met them when I was working at Raven briefly, and then I met Mike, and it was like, oh yeah, Mike's from the community, and he had worked on a full conversion mod called Nuclear Dawn, which was the shit back when, like 10 years ago. Nuclear Dawn was like, holy shit, everybody wants to get on that modding project, it looks amazing. And you know, and when that was kind of like what sparked our just like, oh hey, you're cool, like I'm cool, you know, we're from the same community. But yeah, the roles that we ended up like getting into over the years and just like all of the skills and stuff that we acquired over being in the industry really kind of solidified a good, I would say, like we balance each other out essentially. So Mike's roles are like, he pretty much does everything. I mean, like there's nothing that he can't do. He does all the shader work. He'll like, for example, all the enemies you see in the game right now, Mike built the base mesh. He built the high poly. He textured them. He then rigged them. He then animated them. He then put them in game. He then, coded their attacks. He did the sounds, and like, you know, it's a lot of work, you know. Mm-hmm. And then like my sort of like skill set comes in where not only do I do like the PR public facing stuff, which is something I'm not used to doing, so this is like new to me, mm-hmm. but I'm doing like all the level design stuff and getting that all figured out, and doing the aesthetic for the game, and like really just trying to get the feeling for the levels and all of that, like really polished, because, you know, you can have good gameplay, but if the levels suck, you know, I mean, you have to have both. So yeah. we're really like, I feel like in a lot of senses, like we're balancing each other out in that aspect. So like everything you basically see, you know, from the dynamic sprite stuff to the cool Gib system, that's also dynamic, and like the infinite blood shaders and like the map viewer and everything. Mm-hmm. Mike's coding all of that stuff. I mean, wow. It's just, yeah, he's a beast. I mean, yeah. it's super
impressive. Like the level editor is what really, I almost jumped out of my seat when I watched the little demo of it. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding me? There's like a new way to, basically for me, a new way to make levels. And again, we could talk about that later, but that kind of floored me. But yeah, overall, the design is really beautiful. There's so many of these quote unquote retro FPS throwback kind of projects, but this one, you know, a lot of them just get lost in the, you know, lost in the shuffle basically. But this mm-hmm. one, as soon as you say Proteus, I have a distinctive image that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. And I've been watching that. I watched the 12-minute playthrough that you guys posted recently this morning. And it just like, it brings a smile to my face because I do have questions for you on some of the gameplay stuff. And I know that'll evolve over time.
for sure.
But it is, it's so striking and so solid just right now, even in this, you know, in this iteration of it, it's pretty impressive. So good for you guys and a 2-person team to make a game like this. It's nuts.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, so the thing that's interesting about it is Mike had been sort of kicking around this little, he had like a really small demo, and I can't wait till we can show that video off someday, because it was like, you know, you can see the game in there. You can see he did, like, you know, there's a pistol and it fires kind of on a delay and the animations are really wonky and it's it's kind of cute, and he's got an exploding barrel and like one demon guy that, you know, kind of throws around a fireball, and it was neat, and it was like, you know, he showed that to me right after I quit Payday 2, when I was working for, I quit like in 2000, like the very end, like December 31st, 2017 or something, I quit. And then I was like, hey, Mike, what are you doing? And he's like, I've got this thing. Do you want to, you know, do you want to help me out? And, you know, I was like, yeah, I do. And, you know, what's your plans for it? And like, how do you want to do it? And, you know, what's the division of labor going to look like? And at the time he had like more people sort of interested in the project, but it turns out that, like, you know, they had to leave, so it was just going to be me and Mike working on it. And when I look at, you know, all the ideas that Mike had for the original thing, it was like, it was a lot of ambition. And so what we're trying to do, and like what you've seen in the 12-minute gameplay, is sort of like our first steps towards a lot of that ambition. Mm-hmm. And it took us about, it took us about 8 months to get the game from where Mike had it to what you saw in the 12-minute demo. Wow. And then additionally, the 12-minute demo had some things that we did during the Kickstarter as well. So like, we took a lot of feedback from our original trailer that came out. We did a release trailer an announcement trailer in November of last year, and the YouTube artifacts like really kind of screwed us over. A lot of people were upset that they thought it looked really blurry, and it was just like an unfortunate thing with one of our shaders was making the screen a little blurry. But then, So we took a lot of feedback essentially from the community based on what they saw in that trailer. We reworked it, and that was what the Kickstarter became. You know, it was like, hey, look at all these things that we improved on, and we really want you guys to know that we're 100% being transparent with you. This is like, our development is on our Twitter. You know, we're showing everything. And when we got to the Kickstarter and we had more feedback, you know, people were saying like they couldn't see the sprites a little bit, or they couldn't tell where the enemies were and everything. And everybody was like a little worried about there being too much blood and stuff like that. And we didn't really want to like change our artistic vision too much, you know, because we have like a vision for the game. But a lot of that stuff in the 12-minute video was tweaked based on that feedback that we got. So the sort of like hit indicators and highlighting the enemies a little bit more still has some tweaking to do. But that was done in like 2 days by Mike, based on some like details that we hashed out. And then also, what the funny thing is, I know you guys probably saw the 3D map thing that we got going on.
We were just talking about that before.
I love that, by the way.
So cool.
Yeah, we made that, like, I mean, Mike built that in 1 week during the Kickstarter. He built it like last week. Like we had it on our list, but we didn't know how to do it for the longest time. And when we were talking with Dragonfly, Josh O'Sullivan from the community, we were all trying to figure out ways to, you know, make it. And all the ideas that we were sort of talking about were kind of old school ways that you would do it, like they're brute force, you know. And one of the things that, you know, we talked about earlier was the level editor, right? And our core pillar for the level editor and going forward with the community stuff is that we want to make sure it's super easy to use. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like we want your grandma to be able, like my grandma, I'm gonna like make my grandma sit down and make a level. Like essentially we want it to be super easy so that anybody can come in and not have to worry about, oh, that extra thing. Like, you know, like back in the day it was like, oh, you have to make sure the skybox is sealed, you know, or there's
I deal with that every time I make a Quake map, trust me.
Like Half-Life 2 for me, it was like, yep, we gotta find that and that line. And you know, when you're just starting out and you've got a vertice that's like ever so slightly, like you just learn not to use the vertice tool and like don't use the carve tool and like all kinds of stuff. So you know, that was one of the things that was at the forefront, and we really discussed it for a long time. And the crazy thing was that the solution that Mike came up with was such an amazing story. Essentially, the way that the map is created is it unhides the map. You know, essentially the gameplay function of it is anything that you see gets unhidden in the map, right? And the way that he kind of does it is he uses the blood system to do it, which is awesome. It's like in our game, we have infinite blood everywhere. And like infinite gore, it never goes away. It never goes away. It just stays there, and you can paint any surface with it. And Mike uses the blood system to you're essentially painting the world with blood to create the map, with your eyes.
I saw a GIF on it made me laugh out loud, where kind of it's probably a test or something. You're walked up behind a monster and just keep punching it, and just blah 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 blah, blah, blah all over the place.
Yeah,
it's gonna scratch that brutal itch that some a lot of players have. So that's very cool.
The funny thing about the gore though is like, so I don't know if you've seen our FAQ on the Kickstarter, but there's two questions. There's one that's like, there's a little too much blood. Can I turn that down? And then the answer is, yeah, we're going to have a setting for it. And then the next FAQ question is, there's not enough blood. Can I turn that up? and the quick answer is, yes, we're going to have a setting that you can turn up more blood.
I do want to jump in here because I know that there's just some of the Quake dads and boomers in our small community they're like kind of scoff at Proteus a little bit. But basically, you can really tune a lot of this down. So if you want to play with a high-res 3D model, you can tune that up. Also, I'm very excited about 216p. I saw that on the Kickstarter. It's actually pretty funny.
I haven't had a lot of like fangirling over the 216p. Like no posters being like, you know, in the crowd.
Let me add it. You know, you have 216p, 270p, 360, and then we've got a little bit of a jump to 1080p. So it looks cool. But no, there's just to kind of calm everyone's lay everyone's fears. You can change the HUD. You can change the rendering options, the shaders. I want to ask you a question about the sprites though. Now, so your 3D models first, are they literally sprites when you're in that mode, or is it like a shader that's kind of approximating that?
So it's a little bit of a shader, but it actually is super magic. I mean, it is like Mike, I was like, hey Mike, how is this done? And he just sent me a GIF of like, it's magic. And I believed him, like, cause he's a fucking wizard. Like, I mean, it's insane. Like I think one of the interesting things that, you know, about our game and the way that I enjoyed it, like I love all the settings that we have because I'll play a map through in one setting. And then I'll go back through and play it at a different setting, and it feels different, and it feels fun, like in a fun way. You know, it doesn't change the gameplay, enough to make it not feel good. It's just like I really enjoy all of those settings, and the cool thing about it is like, you know, like you said, our process is like Mike makes the high poly models, and he puts them in game in like a low poly setting. So you can really get that Quake vibe, you know, the original, like, you know, you've got the 3D models running around, and they catch lighting really well. They've got little details on them. And then what Mike does is he's dynamically rendering a sprite live based on the character in the scene.
Wow.
and for the longest time, I was just like this. I mean, that was basically one of the things that got me super hooked on the project, because I saw a barrel. I saw one of the barrels in his map, and I was like, Mike, this is a sprite, but it's catching lighting really nice, and it catches my shadow, and like it like catches the lighting from the gun when I shoot it. I was like, why? How is this a thing? You know? And I mean, the way that he's doing it is just really, it's impressive. And I think one day we'll sit down and do like, maybe we'll do like a GDC talk over all the magic that is done in the game, because it is something really cool. But there's a setting. I think we'll have an option for it for sure. Like there's already an option, but right now in the developer mode, you can just live toggle back and forth between sprites and 3D models. And it's just, it's insane. Mm-hmm. you'll be seeing like the sprites at the, you know, the different frame rates and the different angles, because we can change those per enemy. And it's actually really cool. I mean, there's so many interesting settings that we're going to allow you to really tweak the game to how you would like it to be. And it doesn't screw with the vision of the game either, which is great. Like everything really just fits in.
Yeah, that's got to be really tough to get. But if you've got that, you know, foundation early on in the tech and you don't have to kind of glom it on later, it sounds like the way to go. So that's very cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one of the interesting things about the options too is that, so the background detail and the background resolution changes, like the 10, the two, would you say 216p, was it?
Yeah, 216p.
Yeah, right. I don't hear that number enough to remember it. So the 216p and like to the local 1080p plus, that does not affect the weapons or the sprites from the characters. So you can still have a really high definition background and still have the low poly and low pixelated characters. And then you can up the character pixelation if you want to make them closer to 3D, or, you know, but still have that sprite aesthetic with the different angles and the choppier animations and things like that. So I don't know. I mean, it just feels like magic to me, and I enjoy the crap out of it. It's so much fun.
No, I did have a question for you about the map builder. So you said you wanted to make it really easy. Is it sort of like an approach with like what Doom 2016 did with Snap Map, that kind of thing? Or what are you guys thinking with that?
Well, for PC, we wanted the level designers to have complete control in customizing it. You know, if you want to make a square room and just throw like 80 enemies in there and then upload that map, you know, we want you to be able to do that. So for us, I felt like the Snap Map was mostly for consoles, right? Or did they also do that for PC?
I believe it was on PC as well. That was the kind of the way you make content across the board. And there weren't, from my recollection, because I did it very early on, there wasn't a big difference between the two. Just the controls, right? How you did things.
I feel like if you do Snap Map stuff, it gets a lot closer to what it feels like to have like a procedurally generated game almost. The areas don't feel like they're cohesive. They don't. Like, it can be challenging to have one area loop into the next without breaking the flow in some weird way.
Yeah.
No, we're not doing Snap Map, at least the way I see it for PC. No, we're the editor that everyone's going to get is the one that I've been using to build the game.
Oh, cool.
Like from day one, one of my, like, just experience wise, you know, learning from all the work that we've done, I was like, nope, I'm not going to use like 3ds Max to build my first level. I'm going to use the editor that we have, because we have to build the tools from the ground up the right way. And that was from the forefront, you know, and it delayed us by like another month or so. I think Mike finally got some of the tools up and running in like February of last year. And it was able to, like, you know, I only worked in that build. So essentially everyone's going to get to work with what I've been working with and what Josh has been working with. And I think the cool thing about the level editor, not only that you can really customize your levels, is that we also have the ability to change the colors for anything, like any surface. You can add your own color palettes. So for mappers like Antares in the Doom community, for example, he makes amazingly colorful palette maps, and they'll have like a very specific tone and everything to them. And for someone like him, he could really go in and tweak the colors of each of the materials and things like that, and just have a blast. And it adds like really nice color flares. I mean, you can really get in there and make some beautiful looking content with that. And that whole process is just making it so that everybody can really customize their levels. I would never want to do a Snap Map type thing. Like, it really kills the creativity in some ways in my eyes.
Right. And I will say, go ahead, RC.
I was just going to say that's a great answer because I was kind of setting you up to make sure it was a snap map because so many people were disappointed with that. So,
yeah, I think they had to really make it for the masses, and it was fun to toy around with. But just, coming now, I've done a lot less Doom mapping in my many years. But I just want to kind of explain how this works. If people go to the Kickstarter page or your Twitter, you could see you're not building. It's not brush based, but it's also not sector based. So you're mm-hmm. building the walls, you're stretching out, and you're playing with verts and everything on a planar kind of, right? I mean, it's basically a plane you're messing with. So you drag these things out, and it has this really great tech called Hotspot. And so could you explain that a little bit? And can I cannot wait to get my hands on the editor and try this stuff, because it is really cool. I mean, it's really stunning.
Yeah, that's like another one of Mike's magic tricks.
Right, exactly.
I think, yeah, I mean, he was heavily inspired by somebody that worked at id. They had done like a script for that, like helped themselves out make better levels in like 3ds Max or something. And the guy explained like how he did it on YouTube one day or something like that. And I think Mike really liked that idea, and it really resonated with him. And just, he made his own version based on like the idea of it. Mm-hmm. And essentially, like, if you go back to our very first tweet, there's a material post, and you can actually see what the hotspot really looks like in material form. And essentially, I guess the best way to say it is, if you create a face that's like a square, you know, and then you stretch it to a rectangle, the system automatically figures out the best resolution face or texture density for that face and applies it based on the material you've selected. So if you've selected the crate material, there's a horizontal crate in there somewhere that's perfect for that face, you know, in terms of resolution and texture density. Right. And then if you remove a corner and it becomes a triangle, there's a triangle version of that material face that will just get auto applied, and it stretches properly and things like that. It's such a, time saver.
Yeah, I can't imagine how much time that saves, because you can also go back and, you know, like, I don't know, but do it later, you know, for iterating and just kind of getting these things out.
Yep.
And then as you had said, you have this color picker, and you say, well, I want that one to be, that panel to be red and have whatever highlights have, you know, it's really, really stunning for someone who's used to like, okay, I've got the, you know, I use trench broom, and I've got to, you know, apply the textures, you know, use the UV thing.
It really does. It saves a ton of time. And I think for like new mappers coming in that don't really want to learn, like they don't need to learn the philosophies behind applying a texture and then left justifying it or up justifying it. And then how many degrees do I need to rotate this texture to align it to this triangle face? Like the problems that I would have to deal with, like on Hammer back in the day, it was such an annoying thing. And knowing those shortcuts and everything, you know, it just takes a long time. But now, you know, trims just get applied, you know, and it's an amazing tool, like very fast. And for someone like me, it really helped out quite a bit, you know. And once you get used to it and how it works, it just amplifies your speed and makes you so much quicker. I think the thing that I was really excited about with the editor really early on, you know, besides the hotspot stuff that we've got, is that essentially what we're doing is, and like you said, we're not doing sector based, we're not doing BSP. But it's a basically a mini modeling tool geared towards level editing. So we have extruding faces. So you could, like, you know, if you're working on a triangle or like an angled wall, you can extrude that face out at like a 45, you know, and just pull that out at a 45. And it just works really nicely like that. And then you can make a slice on it, cut a door in there. Then use those faces to extrude. You can grab the edges and pull them out to make an additional face. And it just adds, you know, it just adds to it. And the tools aren't complete yet, which is the exciting part. Like, I don't think we'll ever be totally complete, but we're always trying to make them quicker and easier to use. And it'll just make, I guess, just somebody who hasn't really made levels before, it should make it really easy for them to just jump in and make a level, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you can click and drag and orbit the camera around, you're basically making levels pretty, that's it.
Yeah.
Because everything's kind of widget based from what I'm looking at here. So you have this widget per edge and per plane and face and everything. So
yeah,
pretty cool.
One last thing that I wanted to mention about it though, is that the really interesting thing about it being built in game is that it's literally a part of the main menu. Like, you'll have play game or level editor, and you click on level editor and it just switches to the level editor because it's a part of the game. And the really interesting thing about that is that you can drop a guy down and then just say play, or play from here, or play from here, no clip, you know, and you'll just be in the game. You can just play the game straight up from there. Nice. So like, drop an enemy down, I really want to test this out real quick. Blip, within less than a second, the game is just, it switches over to game mode and you're in there and you're playing it. And then you're like, oh, I need to tweak this. You jump back out. It's the editor. There's no separation between the game and the editor. You're just there and you're making things. So that also speeds up things a whole lot, and just makes it so much fun. So if you've ever seen, like, we have a few GIFs where I make a time-lapse video of one of my processes, and then at the very end, I just drop in and play from where the camera is, and I just land, and then I start fighting dudes. Essentially, that's what it is. Like, you know, I scroll through the different versions of the map, and then at the very end, I hit play from here, and it just drops me in. It's great. Yeah, it's amazing. I love it.
Yeah. And looking on the Kickstarter page, I see one of your GIFs that actually has like sort of a time lapse sped up version of what you're talking about, where the textures are being pulled and realigned and turned into triangles and everything like that. And it looks like it goes by super quick.
Yep. Yeah, that process is amazing.
One other really super nerdy thing, and you don't have to focus on it too much, but as far as the scripting and kind of doing events and things like that, how is it handled? Is it something that's going to be familiar to people who do Doom and Quake, or is this something more akin to, I mean, I've never used Unity ever, so I don't know. Is it something more along the lines of Unity, or how does that work? So, you know, triggering, you know, monster spawns, etc.
Gotcha. Full disclosure, I haven't really used Unity either. Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, because like we're using Unity as a Unreal. But realistic response, you know, we've used Unreal like most of my career, but when I was switching over to Unity, the thing about it was we weren't gonna be using Unity's tools to build our levels. We were gonna be using our tools that Mike was building. So, it's not really Unity. We're using Unity as a base engine for all the lighting and like the code, you know, the base code. And then Mike's built tools essentially on top of it. Like the game is the editor. So it's a completely different system.
Cool.
I think it's cool. I mean, it's a simplified version of what I'm used to using. Like even on Payday, we had a little bit more complicated stuff, but I think what's great about the simplicity of the entities and the tools, at least from my perspective as a professional, like it keeps everything focused. It keeps aligned to just core gameplay. You're not going out of your way to make like some kind of crazy robot transformation thing, you know, using the brushwork and the tools. You know, it's like, you know, you want to focus on the what's going to make the level fun. So the scripting itself is, you know, I think in the Doom editor back in the day, it was like sector based, like, okay, did I touch this sector? And what is this sector? Is it a door? Is it a, you know, for us, the really interesting thing about it is like, for example, if you wanted to make a door in our editor, we have a mover tool or a mover entity. You just place that in and then you grab whatever you want to become a door or a mover and you just parent it to the mover and then you're done. Like, it literally is that simple. And you can just have the mover, you can specify a distance and it actually shows like how far it's moving in the editor and stuff like that, like live preview. Nice. Nice. So it just really makes things a lot faster for you to line up exactly what you need to do. There's not a lot of need to like jump back and forth between the game and the editor for that. So like simple things like that are super easy to pull off. And just like there's a few examples of some of the fun scripting things that I've done where you walk into a room and then like a bunch of the geometry will like come up from the floor and then like some walls open up and like there's like ammo shelves coming up with like ammo
Little strobe light effect looks so rad when that happens.
I love doing
exactly what you're talking about is
that's another cool feature too, but so like that iteration time is really neat, and we've added sort of like a faux prefab system. So like if you wanted to take that shelf that I made and repurpose it for a different level, you can make that a singular map and then you can merge that map in and sort of stamp it around. So if you have a door, for example, we have like one door that we use, and there's one for a 45 degree as well. And you can just basically merge that in over and over and over again and just place it where the doors need to be. And it works. Cool.
So
really
basically
well.
Like prefabs there.
Yeah, essentially prefabs. I mean, there's more work to be done on that, but it's a very simple like stamp system right now.
Cool.
You know, and it definitely helps save a lot of time. And that tech came in after the video footage that you guys saw, like that came in afterwards. So like all the doors were like handmade from scratch each time. Like I had to make sure that they all opened correctly and that they had, their effects playing and sounds and stuff like that. That was a fun time.
I gotta say, Jason, I'm pretty impressed with all the stuff we're going to be able to create in the game, but I'm curious, sort of a two-part question here. What is the protagonist's name, and what is the whole story behind this game?
It's just Proteus, dude. the story is something that Mike and I don't really want to talk a whole lot about right now. I'll just say that I'll tell you the philosophies behind the story just to give you some idea behind like what we're kind of aiming for at least. And like my personal philosophy for story isn't necessarily like an exposition type thing where you're picking up audio logs or there's a bunch of text that you have to read or cutscenes. Like for me, it's the bones of the game. It's the environmental storytelling. It's the, you know, what is the player doing that tells this story? You know, is it the guns that they pick up? Is it the mechanics that are in the game? So that's sort of our backbone philosophy behind it. You know, letting the gameplay speak for what the actual story is. And we're a big fan of games like Dark Souls and like Metroid, and we're sort of taking the Dark Souls philosophy of storytelling in a lot of ways. And I mean, like I said, we don't really want to get into it too much, but I guess the basic like one-liner pitch that we've been telling people that we're like, that we, that's not super spoilery, is that there's the name of the game, Proteus, is essentially the arch villain, or like the main villain is named Proteus. He's an AI god that created you, and you somehow got, you know, free, or, you know, got away, and he's trying to get you back and you're trying to stay away and everybody's trying to kill you essentially for one reason or another. The basic premise is that you're a corrupted agent of Proteus, and you're just trying to eliminate him and the forces around. I feel like that's enough to talk about right now. In terms of like what the community, you know, can understand about the story and like what that might mean, or what the possibilities of like, what does it mean that you're, you know, an AI god created you, and how did that happen, and what is the origin behind that? And there's actually, I mean, I really want to talk about it, but I feel like, you know, when Mike and I are discussing it, It just seems a lot smarter if we don't talk about it too much just at this stage, because a lot of it might change based on more gameplay opportunities,
right,
like that. So we really don't want to go too much into it. But yeah,
well, it's cool. You mentioned being inspired by Metroid, and the first thing I thought of when I saw the HUD and I saw the map pop out, I was like, "This looks like Metroid Prime." Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that was a big influence directly.
It definitely was. But, yeah, we love it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's a great series. The first one's a great game. So will the game have any like Metroidvania style gameplay in it? Like, is there going to be backtracking? Any of that stuff?
That talks a lot to my level design philosophy and what I, you know, playing those types of games growing up, I really enjoyed that as a style. And there's definitely going to be like, I hesitate to say the word backtracking because I feel like it can have a negative connotation with it. But there's definitely going to be like proper reuse. Like if I love using the whole buffalo. I don't like having areas that don't have a purpose. So right. You'll never just like run into like one of my levels and then there'll just be a giant area where you shot like one or two dudes and then that was it. There's always going to be like a reason for that space in the long scheme of things. So for me, yeah, there's definitely large influences there. And like some of my major influences came from like the modding community and even in the Half-Life 2 community. One of the mods back in the day called Minerva Metastasis, made by Adam, and he works at Valve now, but him and then Magnar Jensen made a mod called Improbable, or oh shit, I'm gonna screw up that name. It was but he also did Whoop Observatory and stuff like that, and those those levels were just, they're so well crafted, and they have that, you know, if you're gonna retraverse an area and you're gonna go back over it, it's going to have a different story the next time you come back. It's not going to
right.
fall into space. Like there's definitely like a reverse thought process there, something that makes it feel like a completely different experience. And that's something that will definitely be seeded throughout our game. 100%. Did you guys want to talk about, we could briefly mention multiplayer, I guess.
Yeah, that was, you know, that's always going to be, especially with being able to create custom content in the game. I definitely just want to touch on it as much as you can. I know you guys, it's still early days, really. But mm-hmm. Boy, I'd love to run around and kill people in this stuff, you know, in these levels.
I think so. That was a part of Mike's huge ambition for the game. And when I joined, I was still in producer mode from working on Payday because we had such a small team and we really had to plan out everything because we were making a new level every month or two. And if you screwed up, you know, that meant delays for the game. Mm-hmm. So being in that producer headspace got me thinking about like, how are we going to make multiplayer a possibility for Proteus? And the basic answer is, you know, we're going to be separating our development chunks out properly. So the first early access stuff that we're going to be giving out is going to be single player stuff and focusing on the editor, making the level editor as smooth as possible for everybody and just really getting the content done properly and focusing on making the single player experience awesome. And then after early access comes out, we're switching focus towards getting the consoles finished and also getting multiplayer up and running. Josh, the other level designer that's working with us, he's got an awesome DM background, like deathmatch background. He knows how to make co-op. He knows how to make multiplayer maps. So that's something that like we're really excited to. I mean, and I do too. That's just like, so we're like together, we're going to make some really awesome content and just, you know, going forward, the original levels that we ship for the single player campaign will also be co-opable at the end. And we'll have out of the gate, we're doing standard deathmatch. And then I'm going to try and push in, like, I really want to do Instagib. I'm such a huge fan of that. So I definitely want to push for that. And a few other things like that. So we're definitely we're, we're going to be shooting for multiplayer with the console release. So I'm hoping that goes all nice and smooth and we don't hit any too many bumps.
Right.
What we really want to do is get the multiplayer tools to the community as well so that they can start making stuff. And if we're smart about how we do it, I'm assuming that we'll have a few betas for the mappers to also start working on maps ahead of time. That way it's not just our content that you get to play, but also some weird and wacky content from the community like day one as soon as it drops.
Yeah, so that'd be great. You can't see me right now, but I'm raising my hand.
Yes, you in the back over there.
No, that's exciting. That's just knowing that multiplayer is coming, and especially co-op, because you know RC and I did a stream not too long ago doing Quake co-op, and I forgot how fun it is.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of get busy checking out all these games all the time, and you forget, you know, just sitting down with somebody and playing through a level is just, you know, we did it for Quake and it was just magnificent. So,
I mean, it's fun, right? I mean, just, I think do you guys play with team damage turned on?
I can't. No,
I think we did. Yes.
Yeah. And that was a little weird. That was a weird kind of thing. Cause we didn't play standard co-op. We played something that was literally from the ground up, created for co-op. So we kind of separated quite often. It was weird.
Huh,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was interesting.
Yeah. I every once in a while, like Dragonfly, Josh, he goes and plays, co-op with like 16 people and like you can tell that the game isn't built for that, you know.
It's no op.
But the best part is like team damage is turned on, so you have constantly everyone's tossing rockets and just dying, and it's just hilarious. I don't know if we'll be able to support 16 player co-op. I'm excited for the possibilities of co-op, and just I think the fun expressiveness that comes out of like allowing the players to just be like have fun and do whatever they want, and you know, in your levels, you know, it's a good feeling, and it's definitely something that we're aiming for. And I know that since Josh has gone through, like, he just to clear like the air here, so like he's insane as well. Like, he's sort of like the magic that Mike has for level design. He put together last year alone with a few other people, he put together a 35 map pack megawad for Doom's 25th anniversary. Wow. And he made, I think, upwards of like 20 plus maps by himself for that.
Wow.
And
that's Eve Eternity, right? Eve Eternity.
Yep. Yeah. And it's, gotta play that. It's absolutely insane. I mean, just the amount of like, talk about feeling ashamed of your own skill set. I was like watching him on stream, and I'm working on like my first level there for Proteus, and he's done three levels by the time I'm done like a chunk, you know. And I'm like, holy crap, this kid is like insane, you know. And we definitely were like taking notes, and I think his style is, you know, how there's so many different styles, but like he's got that like drunken master style that's just so awesome. And I love it. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, I need to fire up Doom again and play through this thing, because the screenshots are pretty nuts. Super impressive stuff. Well, good. I mean, it sounds like you've got a good core team, and the Kickstarter, and I meant to say congratulations earlier. You got
thanks. Yeah.
And I'm not just saying this. I told this to RC. Someone, Bal and Andrew Yoder and Immorpher on the Quake Mapping Discord said you guys should have the Proteus guys on. And so I just wanted to shout out to those guys and say thanks for the suggestion.
Yeah.
So, and the game had been on my radar. And so I told RC the other day, I'm like, hey, I'm going to approach, you know, I want to approach these guys. And I sit down, I get home from work that day, and G-Man Lives has a thing on it. And I had looked at your Kickstarter earlier that day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh gosh, I hope they make their funding goal. Jeez, we should have them on. We got to have them on like as soon as possible.
Right.
And then kaboom, the next day, it's like, oh, they got funded. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I wish it was us that, you know, put you over the edge. I somehow think he's got more viewers or subs than we do right now. But congratulations. It's very, very cool that you guys made your first goal. And
I mean, yeah, to talk about that just for a second, like, so like, you know, we put out the 12-minute gameplay video, and, you know, I worked real hard to make sure that, you know, we were able to get that and get everything that we wanted to show off in there, you know, and recording 12 minutes of pure gameplay footage is a huge trek. and there's like one part in the video too, where like I was having such a good run. And then I was looking at something and I missed getting off of a lift and it looked really stupid. So I had to cut like a fade. I had to cut a fade in there because it was like, everything's going so well, you know, it looks so good. And like, I was really happy with like the pace that I was going, at least in the demo. And then I just totally flubbed like a jump or something and it looked so stupid. So I had to cut that together. It was like one of those things where like, you're watching a gameplay review and that you could tell that the guy doesn't know how to play games. It was one of those moments where I was like super embarrassed, but, but like the cool thing about that was like, so, you know, we were huge fans of G-Man and, you know, and we had watched some of his videos before. And, when he was tweeting us and, him and, there's another video coming out by Bunty King soon. And then we also reached out to Mr. Icarus. And I think the scary part about doing like making a personalized build for them was that we don't know how they're going to receive it, you know,
right.
And it could either completely sink the Kickstarter or it could help the Kickstarter. And when your head's down in development, like we are, and we're just constantly building things. And then it's like, oh yeah, we got to make a post about this and whatever. You tend to forget that, like, yeah, maybe the game is good. You know, you're always heads down and it's important to take a step back. And I think it was really nice that, you know, he ended up really liking it. And it was such a blessing. I mean, we're definitely putting a G-Man Easter egg somewhere in the game now. like I don't think we can get around that. But like, you know how you were saying, like, oh, you know, it doesn't look like they might not make their goal. And we were totally prepared to, you know, what we were gonna do to like make that. And I was taking my grandmother out for breakfast that day before his video popped. And she was worried that we weren't going to hit our goal. And I'm like, no. I was like, Grandma, it's okay. Don't worry about it. You know? And she's like, well, maybe don't make such bloody games. Maybe make like, you know, it's like, maybe
something
make
flowers
like,
in it.
Yeah. She was like, you should make teaching games. And you know, and
I was point.
Like,
that's funny.
And, VR needle, you know, point.
Yeah, but you're like, Grandma, you can make levels in this one. It's so easy.
Yeah, it's I want to see Grandma's level. Well, you're a good grandson. That's very nice of you taking your grandma out for breakfast. That's very nice.
Yeah, and then it's just like, what if you guys don't make the Kickstarter goal? Well, I was like, well, you know, it'll just take a lot longer to finish the game, you know? And
yeah.
It's just, you know, one of those things. And then just that night, I mean, I was telling my dad, I was like, yeah, I mean, we sent off some builds and, you know, we're going to cross our fingers and hope they like it, you know, and it was just super stressful. And I mean, I'm still super stressed out even now, even though we've completed our goal. It's just like, okay, we've completed our goal. And now what, you know, like how there's so many things racing through, you know, our minds right now. And we just need to make sure that we keep that level head. We go back into producer mode. And we say, okay, you know, we keep to our schedule is the most important thing for us. You know, I hate backing a project and then it takes 3 to 4 years to come out. That's just not what we're going to be doing. You know, we have a goal in mind and we're going to hit those goals, which is essentially fall this year, we're going to be doing our early access and then follow up 2020, probably fall again. Will be the full release, you know, consoles and all that. So we're really, really making sure that we hit those goals and that anything that might get in our way to prevent that from happening is going to either get cut or refactored, you know, essentially. We just want to make sure that we hit our goals and that we stay on track. And that's just really important to us right now. So the Kickstarter definitely helps with that 100%.
No, that's great to hear, because I know I'm in the same boat where I've forgotten about games that I've kickstarted because mm-hmm. it'll be so long from the release. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, right. I got a copy of this.
Yeah. This kind of leads me to one of the main questions I wanted to ask you is because, you know, there's a ton of indies out there and some of these people are just learning as they go because they don't have professional experience. And obviously you and Mike have AAA kind of experience under your belt. So what does that bring to you? And I don't mean design. You guys obviously tools and design and all that stuff. What I mean is just more biz and PR and that kind of stuff. What have you learned from those areas and brought to your new company?
A lot of what not to do.
No yeah, microtransactions.
Yeah, when I was on Payday, I learned that lesson. So I think it's the opposite, really. We haven't learned too much in terms of PR because PR is done completely differently for indies versus AAA. And like mm-hmm. AAA, they're afraid to show off the whips. They're afraid to show off the sculpts. They're afraid to show off the, you know, as the game's being built because things might change. And that would look bad because somebody's, you know, going to get really upset about that and go, I really like the old model. And then, you know, right. It's going to screw with right. the, you know, the course of the game.
You promised.
Yeah. So I think there's definitely like different skills for that. And that's something that we're kind of going through. But, you know, mentioning back, like, you know, Mike and I come from a modder's background. And I think that 100% helped us out in our current state. You know, we just kept that modder's mentality. You got to be able to do a little bit of everything. Like I can model, I can texture. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we need a little bit of everything, little jack of all trades kind of thing, you know, master of none to some degree, to be able to do what we're doing right now. And I think I am excited to discuss, like, at a GDC one day, just to really discuss, like, what it means to go from AAA to indie in the way that we did. Because when you look at our situation, we're not making any money. We're not paying ourselves. We're literally living in grandma's basement type thing, you know? I would say the only thing that really keeps us like afloat right now is that we both have wonderful spouses that take like the brunt of the expenses, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife pays for the apartment. She pays for my dogs, like dog food. It's like, wow. You know, it's like, you know, we're and then I'll buy myself food. You know, we've both got money saved up, but it's like we're in the bare bones mode. And mm-hmm. and I think a lot of people that go from AAA to indie expect to continue making AAA money, and mm-hmm. we're not making any money right now at all. Even the Kickstarter money, it's not ours. It's not for us. It's 100% all going towards development. It's going towards the physical rewards. It's, you know, there's mm-hmm. a lot of that. Like, I mean, I think when people see Kickstarters and they're like, wow, those guys are going to be so rich. And I mean, no. Like that money is not getting touched by us. It's all going towards the development of the game. 100%. Absolutely. And, you know, when you've got those skill sets that we've learned from the AAA industry and the modding community more specifically, and then you pair that with our sort of like bare bones mentality of just, you know, show, don't tell. I think that that's a real recipe for success in some ways, you know, and I think that's the kind of approach that we're taking right now. And we'll continue to take, like, you know, if your listeners are interested in knowing about the day-to-day happenings of the Proteus team, we will literally, like, you could just look at our Twitter. It we have everything up there. We're not mm-hmm. we're not afraid to show off like what the level looked like in the very beginning, because people are going to go, whoa, that level looks really shitty. And then they're going to see the time lapse and they're going to be like, holy crap, it really turned out nice, you know. And it's you know, it's that mentality, you know, we're all about the show and not telling people like what amazing new features we're going to be adding. We'd rather just make those features and then show you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm seeing is gorgeous, and it's like candy. It reminds me of what I think Steve Jobs said about the like OS X UI when they announced the I want a UI that someone would want to lick. So I want to lick Proteus.
Ew, like, dude, that's kind of gross, man.
Sorry, I'm a little. I need more coffee.
I think you need to reevaluate your partnership here.
Gotta go, guys. I don't know if I can.
As he backs through the bushes like Homer Simpson. See ya.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. It's an exciting project. So, you know, again, congratulations. And we'd love to have you on as you get closer to, you know, the early access and some of that multiplayer beta goodness that you've got up your sleeves.
So. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we only have, a very small team, but we're hoping to go to some of the conventions as well, just to get people that have either backed us or heard about the game to come and play it. So, you know, keep an eye out for, potentially DreamHack in Dallas. And then also, we just applied for PAX in Seattle. And, it's just one of those things that we're hoping to, let people come and check out the game. So if you're ever in those areas, like during those conventions, check our Twitter, see if we're there. And hopefully we are. And, come check out the game for sure.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dump Truck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for Dump Truck_DS. Well, RC, you got something?
I was letting you guys go, letting Jason
wait,
go
wake
here.
Up, dude, wake up. Come on.
I'm awake. What is this? You see what this guy does to me?
No, I just want to say he's really excited about the auto map because he'll be able to find some secrets every once in a while too. Very helpful. I'm sorry, dude. Yeah, happy Sunday.
Yeah, I was talking about that with somebody in the community, posed questions to Mike, and he just kind of internalizes it for like a day or two, and then he comes back with like some kind of magic. So I imagine that might be in the future.
Yeah, I feel like you need to post his photo up on the Kickstarter with just like a magician's hat, top hat with a wand, and just like, this is how it's working.